Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. Governor Chris Sununu delivered his second budget address yesterday at the State House. The speech outlined his funding priorities, from school buildings to mental health to veterans services. And it included a warning for Democrats in the legislature.
You have to decide, are you going to spend money and blow government, or are you going to stand with taxpayers? Are you going to stand with the citizens of our state? We don't have a spending problem in this state. We have a tax problem.
Today, a special budget edition of the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup, the fiscal and political aims of this document, and what Democrats may do with it now that it's the legislature's turn in the budget process. And as always, let's hear from you. What questions do you have about what's in this plan and what's not in it? What's your own take on the governor's priorities spelled out yesterday? And what do you hope happens next? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or call in 1-800-892-6477. And in addition to listening today, you can watch our program on Facebook Live. We have three guests with us in studio. Josh Rogers is here. He's NHPR's senior political reporter. Josh, good to see you. Thank you for being here. Also with us, Jeff Feingold, editor of New Hampshire Business Review. Jeff, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Great seeing you, Laura.
And also with us, Phil Sletten, policy analyst at the New Hampshire Fiscal Policy Institute. And Phil, thank you for being here.
It's great to be here, Laura.
Well, all of you, but I'll start with you first. Josh, what was the overall message of this budget speech from the governor?
I think it was this kind of a stay-the-course message, particularly on taxes, including the scheduled cuts to business taxes that have yet to take effect. And, you know, a similar message to what he's preached before, which is, use money available for targeted issues that may have been neglected, things like the secure psychiatric unit, school building aid, but don't build in structural costs that we're going to have to pay for in the future that will require touching taxes. I think the social media post out of the governor's office that kind of branded this budget as one they call protecting prosperity. I'm not sure anyone else is going to latch onto that. You know, the speech at times was a bit truculent. The clip you played in the beginning about we don't have a spending problem, we have a tax problem. The governor's not proposing cutting more taxes, but it was obviously a warning to Democrats. And, you know, we haven't been in a position with a Republican governor in a Democratic legislature, so this is something new.
Yeah, it's a new political scene for sure. And I also heard that message, Jeff Feingold. We can work on certain issues with one-time funds, but we're not setting up brand new programs here.
Yeah, exactly. And I think really what the governor did certainly at the end of his speech was pretty much draw a line in the sand and say to the Democrats, I'm not going to accept any kind of tax increases. And what's been going on in the legislature the last month or so is that the Democrats in the Senate and the House have been working slowly towards freezing the rate of the business profits tax and not letting it go down the way it's scheduled to through the next few years. And that's really going to be an interesting confrontation because I assume the governor's going to veto it. I don't know if it's I don't think it's a veto-proof majority, but the Democrats are really hell-bent on trying to find some other revenues to pay for other kinds of needs that they see that the governor did not address in his budget address.
And Phil, I want to bring you into this too, but since we're talking about it, let's play a little bit from the governor's speech. This is where he says, I'm just realizing, he said, this is my first opportunity to address the legislature since all of the bills lawmakers have proposed have become public. So let's just hear what the governor said there.
There are a lot of pieces of legislation out there. There are a lot of bills and that are extremely concerning. I'm being nice. My staff edited that part. Look, in total, you have billions of dollars worth of new spending that is being proposed in the legislature right now. It's being rushed along outside of the budget process with no sustainable or viable way to pay for it. Other proposals would have had the state use one-time funds for permanent long-term expenses. And such an approach is frankly just not responsible.
Again, that's Governor Sununu in his second budget address yesterday. It's a special budget edition of the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup today on The Exchange. We're looking at the fiscal policies that the governor presented yesterday, obviously the political policies as well. And we'd love to hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Again, that email, exchange@nhpr.org. Phil Sletten, what were you listening for yesterday in terms of major themes?
Yeah, so there were a couple big fiscal policy issues going into this budget, and three that I was watching for was one is revenue projections. We've already talked a little bit about revenue and some of the challenges with that going forward. Those revenue projections are a little bit more uncertain this year because of some of the changes that we've seen in the business taxes, both in how they come in and some of the rates going forward. The second major fiscal policy issue was education. Education is a big part of the state budget in terms of funding for local education especially. That's something that there's already bills that are being debated in the legislature, a lot of proposals out there. That's something I was listening for in this speech as well. We heard some things about education. There are some other things that we didn't hear. And the third was Medicaid reimbursement rates, which is, you know, sounds a little wonky, but is a very big issue, both for both in terms of service provision for people who are vulnerable and on Medicaid, and also for workforce. It's also a workforce issue for the state. And those are three big dollar ticket items that, or potentially big ticket items that I was listening for in the speech. We heard sort of a little bit about each, and some things we didn't hear. Some things were left out.
Well, and speaking of sounding wonky, revenue estimates also sounds kind of wonky, but that's a big, big deal, guys, right? I mean, Josh, we see this every single time there's a budget. The governor has his revenue estimates, the House has its estimates, the Senate has its estimates. And again, for the average person, they think, well, what's that all about? But it's really important, and there's a lot of politics involved.
It determines how much money you have to spend.
Right.
And, you know, the governor cast his revenue estimates as being conservative, but they do presume continued growth in business taxes with the cuts that are scheduled. His office spoke to reporters about that and said that they're confident that, you know, revenues will be generated off of those. But again, this is a process that plays out until the summer. And, you know, the good numbers tend to come in the late spring, which always gives the Senate budget writers a better sense of how much money is going to be around. I mean, one thing to remember with what the governor's proposing is he's proposing making sure that the rainy day fund stays quite full, and some of that money is actually coming from settlements. But he, whether that's a cushion that he sort of built in that will allow some more spending by lawmakers that he could countenance, or whether, again, that amounts to kind of fighting words, I'm going to keep that money in there. You know, Democrats, Dan Feltes, the Senate Majority Leader, said, you know, it's raining now for many Granite State families. So, you know, that's going to be a tension point.
Right. And boy, this comes up every time, doesn't it, Josh? Should we put some in the rainy day fund? Shouldn't we? We've got all these priorities. So these debates kind of recycle themselves year after year in a way. I want to go to our listeners, gentlemen, and then definitely talk about some of the other issues that you brought up, Phil. Education, for sure. Medicaid reimbursement rates. And a proposal from the governor to bring a little money in for education from sports betting. That was a surprise at the State House yesterday. So we'll talk about all that, but definitely want to hear from listeners today. What did you make of the governor's budget speech yesterday? What do you wish was in it? What did you like about it? What didn't you like? Again, you can let us know at 1-800-892-6477 or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And guys, John is calling in from Newmarket. Hi, John. You're on the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup in The Exchange. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say, as a small restaurant owner, it drives me crazy whenever I hear politicians say that there's no sales tax in New Hampshire, because I have to collect the 9% rooms and meals tax every month, which is a sales tax. And if we're going to tax, you know, restaurants, why not tax everything else?
Well, John, thanks a lot for calling in. And Jeff, he's right. You know, we do have, we don't have a broad-based sales or income tax, but we certainly have a lot of these narrow little slices.
Yeah, and that's really, it's a point that a lot of people have made, especially in his industry there. It's an important revenue raiser for the state, but it does raise questions about it. The state does have a sales tax. It also, for many people, has an income tax in terms of the interest and dividends tax. And actually, beef and profits tax is a tax on income of businesses. So, you know, when they talk about no sales or income tax, you know, for years, this is part of the discussion. I just have to say one other thing. The governor was talking about protecting taxpayers, and he is, in his plan, is protecting people who pay state taxes. But in terms of the property taxpayers, I think that's another discussion that at the local level is being held is going to be a much different response based on, you know, this ideas of certainly what Phil's talking about in terms of the education adequacy aid for education and stuff. That's something that people on the local level have been talking about for several years now, about increasing that.
Okay,
and
so, yeah, go ahead, Josh.
That Democrats found wanting in the speech is that there was no direct discussion of school funding apart from building aid. You know, that Jeff is right that is a real pressure point, and there's been sort of momentum building to do something about school funding. There are bills in the legislature. The governor said in his inaugural address he planned to be at the table with lawmakers as they work through those bills. We didn't hear that yesterday, and from Democrats after the governor's speech, one point they made was that they wanted to do something. They didn't know quite how to do it yet, or didn't spell out their plans, but they said they wanted to make sure there was some relief for property taxpayers in this budget by the time we're done.
Well, and the governor did say that his budget includes relief for property taxpayers. He said, look, my administration has already helped communities last time around by funding investments that cost local taxpayers money. And he did say this budget would do more. Let's hear.
We showed in the last budget that creative management from the state can result in cash investments into local projects, providing property tax relief and funding local liabilities that have gone unsupported for too long. Last year, as many of you know, we invested $275 million into clean drinking water infrastructure, $35 million into local roads and bridges, $30 million into a variety of school safety projects covering over 400 schools in the state. So to keep building on that momentum, my budget is returning to New Hampshire what's been missing for too long: a $63 million fund returning money back to cities and towns for targeted school building aid.
Okay, so for the uninitiated, Phil, this is how it works, right? When the state helps localities out with some of these big, big expenses, they can, in theory, lower property taxes. That's what the governor is saying there.
Right. The idea is that you can offset the amount of money that you'd need to raise through property taxes, which is where a lot of these local governments have to raise their money. They don't really have any other tax revenue sources, at least major ones. So the targeted school building aid reserve fund, as the governor puts in his proposal, this is an idea that's kind of a carry forward from the last budget that he proposed. There was an infrastructure fund that was included in that budget that was going to use surplus dollars and allocate it based on the decisions of a panel of individuals who were, you know, sort of determining which of these projects were worthy of those funds. So this, you know, school building aid, at least we don't, and I should say we don't have the sort of policy side of this budget yet. We don't have sort of the half that lays out a lot of these policy details. We just have the numbers and some of the outlines of where those funds are going. So there's still a lot of unanswered questions around this, but this does not appear to be using sort of the traditional school building aid formula. This appears to be using that here we have these surplus dollars, let's deploy them in this particular way that would be set up in this budget.
Yeah, it's kind of what you said at the beginning, Josh, you know, one-time funds to help out with some of these issues.
One thing that's interesting about this is that this money is actually coming from, one thing this budget will do is it would eliminate the sort of accounting convention known as the Education Trust Fund. And right now, New Hampshire is in a rare moment where the Education Trust Fund actually has a surplus. That's where that $63 million is coming from. They're taking that money, putting it into this targeted school building aid program. Phil's correct, the formula hasn't been spelled out yet, but it's my understanding that it's going to be, you know, targeted in some kind of need-based way to help property-poor districts. I mean, one thing that the governor said during his speech that addressed some of the inequalities between communities in the state is that a zip code shouldn't determine, you know, the outcome of a child's life in terms of their education, and I think that he was referring to this program, and so I think this money is going to be targeted towards districts that need it. But, you know, $63 million is a lot of money, but it's not really a lot of money in terms of the cost of school building aid.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
Exactly, and to just show how this is being set up for, like, I don't know if it's going to be a confrontation. They'll be coming to a meeting of minds sometimes later in the session, is that there's a bill going in the legislature right now to basically say that $50 million a year is the minimum amount of money we're going to give each year to school building aid, as opposed to this one-time 63, and that's, you know, that's really going to be I think what it is, it's showing that there is pressure coming from localities. I mean, because that's really what a lot of this is. We've heard this for several years now, that with the reduction in aid from the state, with the state promising certain amount of aid and then reducing the amount or even eliminating that amount. And I think that it is kind of because I've gotten a lot of people talking to me about this specifically, about how frustrated they are at the local level on this.
Just to clarify, Jeff, so you're saying there's a bill in the legislature that says $50 million is the minimum
every
annually.
Year. Yes.
And the governor is saying 63, as Josh said at the outset of the show, 63 one-time funds.
Well, right now, and I think it's a cap of $50 million or something like that now.
Well, and you know, this school building aid, the state used to have a comparatively sort of generous school building aid, as it was seen, and, you know, that was suspended during the recession. And, you know, there's been... there is still some school building aid money, but you know, this has been we have some districts that have had neglected.
Well, there was a moratorium
spending.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Phil, jump in.
There was a moratorium, and so there's only been one project that's been accepted through the school building aid regular formula. There's only been one project accepted since 2010. I've seen at least one estimate that the backlog is quite large, quite a bit larger than the 63.7. That being said, $63.7 million going back to local governments, you know, may offset property taxes in their education budgets. But I think for local governments, the issue may be this one-time assistance versus continuing assistance. Many
as
of these
Jeff
programs,
said, yeah.
as Jeff and Josh have noted, were frozen or reduced or eliminated following the recession and haven't been resumed.
Okay, so again, it may sound like, you know, school buildings, big deal, especially if you don't have kids in the schools, but there's a real property tax impact here, Josh, when schools get help with these big projects.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, those discussions are getting going in districts across the state
right.
as we get towards meeting time.
That's right. Okay, so again, listeners, what did you think about the governor's budget? If you got a chance to listen to it, if you didn't listen to it, what questions do you have about the governor's budget address yesterday? What's in it? What's not in it? And what you hope happens next as this budget process begins in the legislature? Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. It's a special state budget edition of the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup today. And guys, Brennan sent us an email. The governor's budget is very responsible. As a taxpayer, I really appreciate it when a rainy day buffer is saved up. The good economy isn't going to last more than 2 years. You need to be prepared for the next downswing. This is just basic financial literacy. Brennan, thank you so much. And Jeff Feingold, kind of putting on your economist hat, some economists are saying, look, this isn't going to last forever. There are sort of murmurings about a possible downturn in the economy.
Yeah, that's been a talk for at least about a year now that things can't stay good forever. And, you know, that we've seen some signs, not necessarily in New Hampshire, but nationally and internationally, that can affect New Hampshire going forward in the next year or so. And it's possible there'll be a downturn maybe sometime next year. We don't know. But it's likely that in the next year or so, there will be something that there'll be some adverse economic issues that we have to deal with. And, you know, there are two ways of looking at it. It's looking at it the way Brendan's looking at it, which is basically saying, you know, let's put money away for rainy day. But there are others who say, and I know this is true, that's the argument of the people who want to freeze the business taxes, saying we need the money now to do this because we can't afford to keep lowering taxes if we're going to be needing revenues going forward.
That's
if
what
there
the
is
Democrats
a downturn.
Yeah, said,
if there's a dip in revenue. I mean, it's just a philosophical disagreement they're having.
Phil, go ahead real quick.
Just that the rainy day fund was designed to capture revenue surplus for sort of these situations, right? So that when times are better and there's a revenue surplus, you can save it for a time when there's an economic downturn. And we're in the second longest economic expansion since the 1850s. That doesn't mean it will die of old age, but it means that we should be looking ahead to plan for, you know, potential hardships, remembering what happened during the last recession.
Okay, Brennan, thank you for the email. You can send us an email as well, exchange@nhpr.org, your questions and comments about the state budget that the governor presented yesterday and what you hope happens next. Now, coming up, we'll look at what the governor proposed for mental health and business taxes. We'll also hear about that sports betting proposal, which again caught a lot of people by surprise at the State House yesterday. So keep it right here. This is The Exchange, the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR.
When you give now to support the news you trust from NHPR, not only will you help to shorten the March fund drive, you'll also be entered to win an incredible trip to Anchorage, Alaska, where you can soar above the glaciers, stay up late to see the northern lights or the midnight sun. You'll also be entered to win our grand prize, a trip for two to Honolulu, Hawaii, courtesy of Milne Travel American Express. Give now to support the NHPR programs you love at nhpr.org.
This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's a special budget edition of the Roundup. Governor Sununu kicked off the budget process yesterday with his address to the state legislature. Now it's the House's turn, then the Senate. We're hearing what priorities the governor presented yesterday, from health care to education. And let's hear from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. What's your own take on what the governor said yesterday? What do you think about what's in this plan and what's not in it? Again, we'd love to hear from you. Exchange@nhpr.org is the email, and our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Jeff Feingold, editor of New Hampshire Business Review, Josh Rogers, NHPR's senior political reporter, Phil Sletten, policy analyst at the New Hampshire Fiscal Policy Institute, and of course, on Fridays, in addition to listening, you can watch us on Facebook Live. So, gentlemen, in our first segment, we talked a lot about business taxes. We touched on it, but let's hit it straight up. And Jeff, I'm going to go to you first, since, again, editor of New Hampshire Business Review. If you could just real quick, Jeff, remind listeners when these cuts started to go into place and what the big controversy was all about.
What happened was that there was a legislation passed in 2015 session to phase in progressive cuts into the business profits tax and the business enterprise tax, which are the two major business taxes. At the time, the business profits tax was 8.5%, and it was one of the highest in the country. And the business enterprise was 0.75%, and that's a tax on payrolls and other things. The phase in was to bring it down eventually to 7.5% in 2021. Right now, in January, it was 7.7%, according to this phase-in. But what this legislation now in that passed and actually in the House Ways and Means Committee.
It's passed already.
Passed in the House. I'm sorry.
Passed in the House. That's interesting.
House Ways and Means Committee.
Yeah. So Democrats are already working to roll
And what they want to do is make it 7.9%, which is what it was last year, and eliminate the 7.7%, basically roll it back to last year's tax rate. And the same is true now of the business enterprise tax, although there was another bid to actually lower the business enterprise tax to 0.5% just right out of the bat, but that didn't work in the committee.
So, Josh, politically, this is tricky for Democrats, isn't it? I mean, they said that this was going to blow a hole in the state budget. That didn't end up happening. And I can already hear the ads against them. You know, in 2020, Democrats voted to raise your taxes.
Well, it seems that according to Democratic leaders yesterday, they essentially were signaling that they expect that there will be a coalescence among Democrats around a policy to freeze taxes where they currently stand now, not to let the reductions that Governor Sununu kind of drew a line in the sand go through that have yet to take effect. And, you know, you recall back to 2015, the business taxes were why then Governor Hassan vetoed the budget,
right?
Because she was concerned, and those were her words, blowing a hole in the budget. There were certain, protections put in to avoid that. The revenues came in. We've since had the federal tax changes that have certainly, in the minds of many, enhanced the revenues that have come in on the business taxes. For Governor Sununu, he's made this really a signature issue for him. Republicans have certainly rallied around this. And, it's predictable enough. We'll see what Democrats do. I mean, the way they took exception at the way that Governor Sununu was characterizing what they've been doing, essentially sort of casting them as kind of out of control. When they said, they've been trying to work collegially and collaboratively with Republicans on both spending and, perhaps less so on the tax side bills, and that he ought to respect that. But, there were certainly a lot of fighting words on taxes from the governor yesterday.
Well, and he did draw a line in the sand on these business tax reductions, urging the legislature to let these reductions continue. Let's just hear a little bit about what the governor said.
A healthy business cycle is predicated on certainty. Our businesses, small and large, order many of their affairs according to the government's long-term plans. And it's irresponsible governance for the legislature to ping-pong core tax policies every 2 years.
Again, that's the governor yesterday talking about business taxes, saying don't go up and down and back and forth. Just real quick, Jeff, what do you hear from businesses? You cover a lot of companies here in New Hampshire about, you know, they're going down. No, they're not. We're going to freeze them. Whatever.
Yeah, there's frustration on that part. There are issues. There are signals coming from Concord and Washington as well, where things are going up and down. And it's not predictable.
Businesses like stability.
Yeah, and they do, and that's obvious. But on the other hand, if you look at the business profits tax, that's paid by a relative handful of corporations in New Hampshire, as opposed to the business enterprise tax, which is paid by pretty much every business. And you know, to mix the two, that's a much different. Those are hitting much different kinds of businesses, much different companies. So most of the businesses I talk to, not that many of them pay the business profits tax.
I see.
They do pay the business enterprise tax. And that's the one that really is much more, they keep an eye on more.
Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, and on that point, part of the reason why we've seen these large revenue strings has been because of the federal passage of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in December of 2017, as Josh mentioned. That has spurred a lot of activity on the business side in terms of, you know, their responses to the tax law, mergers and acquisitions, potentially. So that has increased revenues in the near term that we've seen. You know, mergers and acquisitions otherwise, and the economy obviously have some effect. But that is really what has driven a lot of that spike, because the business profits tax is affected mostly by U.S. and multinational corporate profits. That, you know, more than half of the business profits tax paid in 2016, for example, was by multinational corporations, by these so-called water's edge corporations. So tying it to, you know, that the New Hampshire economy is doing well is definitely part of the business tax revenue picture, but a lot of it is what's happening nationally and internationally, again, especially with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
All right, let's go back to our listeners, gentlemen. Again, it is a special budget edition of the Weekly New Hampshire News Roundup this week. We're looking at what the governor presented yesterday, and we'd love your thoughts and questions. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also respond on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like, and you can watch our program today on Facebook Live. Jesse is calling from Walpole. Hi, Jesse. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you, Laura, for acknowledging those of us who didn't listen yesterday. I skipped it in the morning and the evening, but I want to thank you. You had an excellent program, and I was happy to be listening to The Exchange.
Good. Go ahead, Jesse.
I think it pointed out that discussion mostly focused on the recovery aspects of the opiate response. And I'd like to know if anybody can say there was a comment on how the budget will be spent now, since it's mostly been allotted to MAT, and I think that's a miscalculation. Recovery services really need to be built out.
Medication-assisted treatment. And you're referring, Jesse, to our program in Nashua, right, that we broadcast on Thursday.
Yep.
Thank you. And it was a great crowd there. And I'm glad you called, Jesse, because, Josh, some of the criticism from Democrats after the speech yesterday was, hey, why didn't the speech mention the opioid crisis? But was this budget document the appropriate place to put that, given that there's a lot of federal money coming in?
Well, you know, I was surprised that there was no mention of it. You know, the governor's speech was blessedly shorter than his inaugural address, which was, you know, stretched to an hour. this we were told was going to be shorter. I was surprised there was no mention of that. You know, there was certainly plenty of mention of related issues regarding mental health and, you know, DCYF, which is also touched by the opioid crisis, but no direct mention
of the opioid crisis in this speech. Jeff, did you have some thoughts there, too? Again, there's a big chunk of federal money now going into opioid recovery, a lot for medication-assisted treatment, as our caller mentions. So I'm just wondering what the state role in this is now.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting, because that is... The state has been, was historically, you know, woefully negligent in addressing this by itself without that federal money. And now that it has it, I think that really it's kind of saying, well, we have this source of money. It seems like a pretty robust source of money that they can just say, well, let's look, and the governor certainly can say, let's look at some other obligations we could spend our remaining funds on, that we don't have to worry about it as much as we had to before we got this source of federal funding.
Okay, a couple emails have come in, and these seem up your alley, so I'm going to throw them to you, Phil. Tom sent us an email. Might your guests have any insight as to how the partial federal government shutdown might have impacted New Hampshire state tax revenues? I know the IRS has announced a decline in federal revenues. Wonder if that trickled down to the states. If so, what might be the implications? Do you know, Phil? This is not quite on the governor's budget, but it is a revenue impact.
Yeah, so in terms of the state's tax revenue collection, that would be a pretty hard effect to disaggregate. I'm sure it may have had some effect. In terms of the money coming from the federal government, it did change how New Hampshire had to appropriate and send out food stamp benefits and supplemental nutrition assistance program benefits. All those benefits come from the federal government. And on the federal revenue side, the federal government did dramatically change its tax structure again back at the end of 2017. And what we've seen, especially on the corporate tax revenue side, where the top rate went from 35% to the flat 21% rate, that had a large, you know, downward effect on revenues from corporate taxes at the federal level. So that's probably part of the picture there.
Jeff?
Yeah, also, in terms of the shutdown itself, specifically for New Hampshire, we did a story about this, and there were about $100 million in federal contracts that were not fulfilled during the shutdown. And that could have affected some specific businesses and the amount of money they earn for the that period, and maybe they're eventually what they pay in their taxes. But it's, you know, it's a pretty negligible amount in terms of that.
Tom, thanks for the email. Here's another one from Marjorie. The governor's education funding plan is a shell game. There has never been an educational trust fund. It is part of the general fund. And whatever is committed for educational funding comes out of the general fund first. To state that there is a surplus and the surplus can be used for school construction sounds good, but $50 million for school construction will barely scratch the surface. Marjorie, thank you for that email. Anybody want to jump in on that, Phil?
So the combining, as Josh mentioned, of the general funds and the education trust funds is interesting. Basically, the general fund is the fund that legislators have the most flexibility with in terms of how they move dollars from budget to budget. The education trust fund is designed to collect money from certain sources that are supposed to go to those adequate education grants. And they do, but it often runs a deficit, which means that the general fund usually bails it out. Usually provides a little bit of money for it at the end of each biennium. Because of the way tax revenues have behaved in the last year, again, making the revenue projections particularly difficult this cycle, the Education Trust Fund actually has a surplus. And under law, the Education Trust Fund is supposed to keep that surplus for those adequate education grants. So without getting too far into the weeds, combining them basically opens up a whole new set of questions. But they have been balanced together before. They're drawing from the same revenue sources, so they're often analyzed together. Combining them does make some sense when it comes to sort of an accounting mechanism, right? Making it easier to sort of put the tax revenue in one place. But this budget does raise some questions about how that reorganization would work, how it would affect where certain tax revenues go. If, for example, the statewide education property tax, does that not stay dedicated to education in this situation? Lottery revenues are set aside in the governor's plans as being restricted. So there, it opens up a whole bunch of questions in terms of how these two funds being combined, which in some ways makes quite a bit of sense, would affect the sort of landscape of how revenues flow.
Wow, it's complicated. Thank you for that explanation. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the lottery, because that gives me the perfect segue to ask you guys about a proposal in the speech that took Republicans and Democrats by surprise. Sports betting. The governor surprised a lot of people, including longtime gambling supporter Senator Lou D'Alessandro, a Democrat. The governor put forward a proposal to allow sports betting as a source of a little bit of school funding. Let's hear.
This budget also increases our education revenue streams. Where's Lou? We're going to legalize sports betting too, Lou. We'll get it done. Given the new opportunities to legalize sports betting in a responsible and reliable way, capture more revenue for our education system, I say we go all in and simply get it done. I joked with Lou in the hall about an hour ago that I decided I couldn't support that, and I thought he was going to have a heart attack. Just kidding. Good Lord.
Sports betting, Josh. Republicans and Democrats.
The governor has signaled that he was game for this in the past. It's obviously not. We don't really know the details on it. It's going to be the Lottery Commission's task to sort that out. I think they're talking about, raising $10
million, $10 million
in the year
two
of the biennium. The Supreme Court cleared the way for this, and it's not surprising that the state would would go for that, frankly.
That's right. Okay, I do remember
what,
when...
We'll see what the legislature...
I do remember now that you mentioned it, the Supreme Court did clear the way for that. Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
And also, Senator Alessandro has a bill in, and there's another bill in the House that would that addresses this, that would establish some kind of net, some kind of mechanism to have sports betting. The senators would be, I think, would be limited to a certain number of facilities. The other one would be more like a Keno type of a thing where you can go any pretty much anywhere to place a sports bet. And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens because, you know, I guess the $10 million estimate I think is pretty low from what I understand just nationally, but I don't know enough about it.
Can somebody remind us what happened with Keno? So that was the last time that was supposed to be funding that went to kindergarten. People called it Keno-garten. Towns could choose whether to adopt Keno or not. A lot did, and some didn't. What's the status of those funds, Phil?
Sure. So there were some municipalities that decided to adopt it and some that didn't decide to adopt it. Those revenue projections that were made in terms of funding kindergarten with Keno, which I should say they aren't, you know, technically sort of connected in law, at least for the amount that the amount that's the base amount that school districts that have full day kindergarten get. They get $1,100 more per student regardless, right? Regardless of what Keno revenues are. So those Keno revenues haven't come in quite as strong as they had hoped, and also the cost for funding those increased adequacy gains for full day kindergarten is a little bit higher. Now those are drawn out of the Education Trust Fund, which, as we've talked about, has a surplus, but so there's not sort of a fiscal constraint on that point. But Keno revenue is something that has to be watched because we don't know how it's going to trend, and it depends on what those municipalities decide.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that because, again, I'd heard something recently about Keno revenues not coming in quite as robustly as expected. Let's go back to our listeners, gentlemen, and Roger's calling in from Stratum. Hi, Roger. Thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Good morning. Morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm told that the room and meals tax, which is collected by the state, is supposed to be redistributed to municipalities on a per capita basis, but that's changed and the distribution is no longer happening. Can your guests comment on the room and meals tax?
Roger, thanks a lot for the call. Real quick, Phil?
Yeah, so there's a set forth in law originally 40% of the meals and rentals tax, which is same as the room and meals tax, revenue collections were supposed to go back to municipalities on a per capita basis. Right, there's the legislature had changed that through temporary laws over the years. There's a catch-up formula that's supposed to get it back to that 40%. That catch-up formula has been suspended. My understanding is right now it's about 21% go back to municipalities on a per capita basis from the meals and rentals tax. So some still does, but that's an example of one of those programs that since the recession has been either suspended or stalled or curtailed in some ways that gets money back to municipalities.
Which goes back to the point that I was making before, is that there is a lot of growing frustration at the local level, and this is a perfect example of why how frustrated people are in Concord, the cities and towns about Concord.
Revenues that cities and towns
used to get, and they don't get the revenues anymore. They feel as if they have more obligations, especially when it comes to education. They're not getting enough funding from the state, enough help from the state to offset those costs.
All right. Well, coming up, we're going to talk about what the governor said on mental health. There were a lot of proposals there with the state's 10-year mental health plan. So we'll hear about that. We'll also talk about family and medical leave. This is a big point of contention between the governor and Democrats, and we'll get some comments from Democrats on what they heard and did not hear from the governor in his speech yesterday. And we'll keep taking your questions and comments. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, it's a special budget edition of the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup, and we'd love your thoughts on what's included in the governor's budget presented yesterday, what's not included, what you hope happens as this process really kicks off. Again, our email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tuesday on our show, a spotlight on special education and questions about why some federal money for it went unspent. Now, send us an email on this topic before the show, exchange@nhpr.org, and then join us Tuesday on The Exchange, live at 9. This hour, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup, a special state budget edition, and we're taking your questions and comments about what the governor put forward yesterday in his budget address and what might happen next now that it's the Democrats' turn. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. You can email us, exchange@nhpr.org. And in addition to listening, you can watch our program today on Facebook Live. So, Josh, just let's just backpedal a little bit. We've been talking a lot. We've been hearing from a lot of listeners about, you know, the governor's proposal for X or Y or Z. How much does this really matter, the governor's speech yesterday? Will the final budget look anything like what the governor presented yesterday?
There'll certainly be elements that are consistent with what the governor proposed. But by and large, governors propose, legislatures dispose.
Right.
And,
Civics 101.
And, you know, the governor is going to be meeting with House budget writers on Tuesday. Given the close of his speech, it'll be interesting to see how much of a chill in the room there is there. But, you know, this budget will, you know, the House will pour through the budget. They'll take some suggestions. They'll toss plenty of others. Then it goes to the Senate. And, you know, there's also an interchamber tension in budget processes that sort of sometimes transcends partisan differences. And that's one thing that's going to be interesting to watch this year with Democrats controlling both chambers is how much of a mind are budget writers in the House and the Senate within the Democratic Party? Will there be differences? I mean, the senators tend to have more, you know, they have later revenue numbers. They tend to have a better grasp. And due to the smaller number of members, they often, you know, have historically, you could argue, tend to get their way more of the time than House budget writers do, somewhat by dint of the calendar. So, you know, there's a lot we don't know. There's some elements of what the governor's proposing will probably end up in the budget. Certainly plenty of them won't. You know, one thing that's worth mentioning is that yesterday, as the governor was presenting his budget, you know, the legislature was meeting, and, you know, there were bills passing out of the Senate, one for DCYF that funded DCYF at levels higher than what the governor proposed. That passed unanimously, and that's at the same time when the governor is sort of implying that sort of Democrats are spending wildly. There was a meeting of the minds between Democrats and Republicans in the Senate on that. There's paid family leave passed on a party line vote in the Senate yesterday, a plan that would essentially institute a sort of a payroll tax to pay for that. Republicans are quick to call that an income tax. You know, the governor sketched out the details of his policy, but, you know, we are a long ways from being done. And, you know, it's an open question how engaged the governor's office is going to be in these budget negotiations and how open Democrats may be to listening to anything much he has to say. Yesterday afterwards, the Senate's Majority Leader Dan Feltes said, you know, we're going to work on a budget that works for the working people of the state, and, you know, the governor can sign it or not.
So what it looks like at the beginning of the road.
Yeah, so there certainly wasn't, yeah. You didn't get the sense that there was going to be too much cooperation.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned family and medical leave, paid family medical leave. This has been a big issue last year in the governor's race, this year in the legislature. The governor has his plan. He mentioned it yesterday, Josh, right? He said, my plan has no income tax, and sort of touted that. Let's hear just a little bit from what Donna Soucy said. She's a Democrat from Manchester. She's a Senate president. This is Donna Soucy on the governor's comments about the Democrats' paid family medical leave plan. By the way, this audio thanks to WMUR.
The slap about paid family medical leave, which the governor knows is a priority and which he does not have a plan for, really was a swipe at many of the leaders of this legislature.
So let's talk a little bit about this paid family medical leave bill. Go ahead, Jeff. This has been a point of contention. We did a whole program on this a couple weeks ago, and, you know, it seemed like maybe they could come together, but then it didn't seem that way in the end.
In the last session, it seemed as if that would come to fruition, but it didn't at the last minute. The governor said he couldn't support it because of that it would basically say that people could just have to be in and couldn't opt out or whatever. It was, you know, legislative stuff. But this year, There's two bills going on. The House, as Josh said, in the Senate, they passed their bill yesterday. The House is meeting next week. They'll have another committee hearing on it, on their bill. And they basically saying that all employees, private employees, have to be in this. It's 0.5% of basically payroll tax, like an unemployment insurance tax. And it would set up the fund for this insurance plan. The governor's plan, it was unveiled a few weeks ago with the Vermont governor, Phil Scott, to have like a bi-state insurance program for all the state employees, and then private employers could opt in to be in that. But the governor really didn't give any details of this. And the interesting thing I found was that there's not going to be a separate bill. It's going to be in the budget. His plan is going to be in the budget.
House bill too. They did release the text of the bill.
Yeah.
Yesterday afternoon, it had been indicated that it wasn't going to come out for a week. I think in light of people saying there was no plan,
they released this. But the thing, it's going to be in the budget itself. It's not going to be it's not going to be part of the legislative process. So it's not going to be really anything discussed until June. Basically, it's going to be on that.
This was the governor's critique, that Democrats were passing all these bills that had funding attached to them outside of the budget process.
That was what he said yesterday. But the other thing is that's how it's been the last couple of times they've tried family medical leave. It hasn't been in the budget. It's been a separate bill. But the point is that it's still not clear how the governor's plan will work. It's supposed to be reliant on Vermont, and we actually have a story in our paper coming out today that the Vermont State Employees Association wants nothing to do with the Vermont bill.
That's part of it, because if for it to become a benefit for state employees, that has to be negotiated.
Yeah.
And so
through
that's
the unions
another,
and so forth.
Yeah, it's problematic the way the governor's plan is set up right now, because it doesn't seem like it can get off the ground right away.
Well, and Bob Sanders from New Hampshire Business Review, Jeff, joined us on our show, and I just refer listeners to that program because it was real interesting. We also did hear from somebody in Vermont talking about what you mentioned, Josh and Jeff, about how it's sort of being played out or not played out in Vermont. I want to ask all of you about one area where Democrats said they were happy with what the governor put forward, and that is mental health funding. The governor said his budget invests deeply in the state's mental health system, and especially the new 10-year mental health plan. Let's hear.
We're not going to slow roll this plan over 10 years, frankly. We have the opportunity to make very big impacts today. And in total, through this budget, and with the executive actions in the coming days, we'll be able to immediately address two-thirds of the recommendations in the 10-year plan. In addition to taking major steps with that mental health plan today, I'm proud to say that we're in greater compliance with the community mental health agreement than ever before. And we know, though, that the job is not done. These efforts will not fix the system overnight. It takes time, but I'm confident that because of these reforms and because we are aggressively re-engineering the mental health system, we'll set the gold standard for the rest of the nation.
Again, that's the governor talking about his mental health funding plan. Can you just put this in the bigger picture for us, please, Phil Sletten? There's been a lot of criticism that the state let the mental health system sort of crumble. That's part of the reason why we see this opioid crisis now, as people self-medicate because they haven't been getting the mental health care they need. So lots of money for mental health there, but no mention of Medicaid reimbursements, which is how a lot of these mental health centers are paid, how a lot of the staff is paid. So can you just help us figure this out?
Right. So there's the expansion of the number of beds issue in terms of what's available for people with mental health crises to go to, because part of the avoidance in terms of incurring other costs sort of broadly to the economy is having people not able to get the care that they need sitting in sort of regular emergency rooms, if you will, in hospitals for, days or longer at a time is something that the state is trying to make investments, or the governor's proposing to try and make investments through this budget to avoid by adding beds and adding, I think, 148 total adult beds is the number that he mentioned through this proposal. So there's that side of the issue. But Medicaid reimbursement rates are an important part of it. Again, these are a lot of these folks who are assisted through Medicaid, right, who are one of the 180 or so thousand people in the state who are covered through Medicaid, including on the mental health side. The providers of those services are either contracted with or have an agreement with the state government in some form, maybe through another organization as well. But the money comes from the state federal matching funds that fund Medicaid. Now, the state has some control over those reimbursement rates. So think of this as, you know, there's a certain amount of dollars for a service, right? Whether it's a home visitation or a certain medication, those dollars come through Medicaid and have a certain amount of dollars set to them that the provider then receives. And if those rates, some of which haven't been adjusted for many years, have stagnated relative to the costs of those services, that limits the amount that, for example, a provider can pay their workers. So this is how it intersects with the workforce issue.
Lots of workforce shortages in this field, especially mental health. And
right, with a 2.5% unemployment rate, it's difficult to find people who do some of this very complex or labor-intensive or emotionally intensive work at the rates of pay that providers that rely on Medicaid funding are often able to pay.
I mean, I've heard the governor recognize the lack of decent pay as a real limiting factor for some of these services. It's my understanding that that rate changes are not contemplated in this budget.
Okay. With the exception for the developmental disabilities community, that's one place, and that community did overall very well in this budget in terms of their funding being increased quite a bit.
Eliminating the wait list, right? Isn't
that what you said yesterday? So it's not only eliminating the wait list, but also annualizing, if you will, like taking the folks who were on the wait list last time and making sure that they have full funding this time. My calculation was that it's a $117.8 million increase for those services if you compare the last budget as passed to this budget proposal. So it's a large chunk of change. And then there's the 2.5% reimbursement rate increase for those, my understanding is for those direct service providers, or at least part of that increase would go to them.
Well, guys, lots of emails that I will not have time to read. I do want to read one. This is from Joelle in Milford. The number one issue my constituents continue to share with me is the property tax burden. In Milford, our local property taxes have gone up 58% in 10 years. Joelle says there was no mention of property tax relief, and as Jeff mentioned, no local municipality downshifting relief in the governor's budget. Joelle says, Governor Snood is quick to point out that businesses need a predictable tax climate. What about all Granite Staters' budgets? Too many New Hampshire residents are worried about losing their homes due to the property tax burden. Joelle, thank you for the email. And guys, we're going to close out a little bit early today, but before we do, Josh Rogers, real quick, what are you going to be covering next week?
Oh, I don't know yet. I mean, there's a lot going on. I'll be certainly over at the legislature on Tuesday when the governor visits House Finance. And, you know, there's some presidential folks in and out, so I'll probably be checking that.
But that's right.
That's my plan. It's early Friday.
Well, it's very busy at the State House, and there's a parade of presidential candidates coming in. Super quick, Jeff, what are you going to be working on?
Well, I know that there's going to be a vote in the House on the paid family medical leave, their bill, so that's something we're watching very closely.
Okay, how about you, Phil?
I'll be looking at, so our annual conference is next week for the Fiscal Policy Institute, so I'll be preparing for that. Going forward with this budget, looking to see, you know, with this focus that the governor put forth on vulnerable children and vulnerable families and individuals who may need more services, how does that fare then going forward in the process? And where do some of these places where there are reductions, for example, with a civil legal services fund?
We didn't even talk about that.
If there are other places that there are those sorts of issues.
Well, I just want to let everybody know we've got Congresswoman Anne McClain Custer on next week. So if you want to send us your questions for her, go to nhpr.org/exchange. In addition to the budget, guys, it was Valentine's Day this week. Remember? So our producer, Ali Yashinsky, collected love notes from listeners for New Hampshire. Now, she put this together in a lovely audio postcard. We're going to hear it in just a moment. I want to let everybody know that it's going to conclude with a song by Craig Greenman. You can also find visuals of these love notes on our website, nhpr.org/exchange.
Hi, this is Catherine Peterson from Concord. This is my poem for the New Hampshire Love Note Bank. New Hampshire, I love the way you light up in spring, lilacs lining the roadways. Your summers filled with lakes and mountain sunshine, the precious fleeting autumn alive with color and sweet apple trees ready for picking. And winter, cold and clean and quiet.
I love the way we patiently and respectfully merge in traffic. No creepy road rage aggression like in some other unnamed states to our south.
The mountains and the lakes and the snow. I love winter. I love the four seasons. I love that it's living where I live. It's close to the ocean. So we have it all in New Hampshire. It's a great state.
My love for New Hampshire began when I saw the cover of the December 1982 issue of National Geographic. It was a photo of the town center in Washington, New Hampshire. At the time, I had never lived anywhere other than Northern California. In 1985, my husband, my 7-year-old son, and I traveled here for a vacation and to scout different places where we might like to live. We decided on the Monadnock region and finally made the big move in December of 1989. We ended up buying a lovely home in Swansea, where we lived happily until 2003, when I was widowed shortly after our son married. In 2005, I moved to the Portland, Oregon area because I felt that I needed a life change. But a large piece of my heart always stayed here. To get to the happy ending, I married my high school sweetheart in 2009, and we decided to return to New Hampshire last March. Now I feel that I am back where I belonged all along and could not be happier at becoming a New Hampshire resident again, this time for good.
Hi, this is Joyce Craig, Mayor of Manchester. The residents of New Hampshire, especially our young people, are what I love most about our state. Their passion, drive, and courage gives me incredible hope of New Hampshire's future.
One of the things I love about New Hampshire is the election season and how we New Hampshire folks sort of respond to the election season and how all the presidential candidates have to come here.
Hey, this is Maggie Hassan from Newfields, New Hampshire. I love New Hampshire for a whole lot of reasons, but I really love the fact that we settled a state made of granite. We're tough, but we also really care. And we blend individualism and community like nowhere else. Happy Valentine's Day, Granite State.
Dear New Hampshire, I love your woods in all seasons. I love your rivers for a million reasons. You are my forever home, and I am the lucky one. Bye-bye.
Well, you heard about the Hamptons, they're the place where New York's rich people go to blow their dough. Well, they get it and they spend it, and they get it and they spend it, and they get it and they get it and they spend a little more. But here in New Hampshire, when the summer finally comes, we done got ourselves a beach, and all you need to bring a buck or two, a good time is easily within reach. Yes, we've got some Hamptons of our own, just a weekly rake, no need to own. Buy yourself some pizza and some cheap fried dough, it's a few more calories to tote. Well, you heard about the Hamptons, they're the place where New York's rich people go to swim and pool. Well, they're hopping and they're nobbing and they're hopping and they're nobbing and they're hopping and they're hopping. They got nothing else to do, but here in New Hampshire, when the weekend finally comes, we done got ourselves a place that's got some fireworks, several other perks. It's a fascinating use of public space. Yes, we've got some Hamptons of our own, just a weekly rate, no need.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.